I'm Catherine Ident in for Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today we have our monthly talk about gardening with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark, who joins us this morning by phone. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
And we're going to be taking your comments and questions this hour. You can give us a call, 866-999-4626, or you can email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. Roberta, a wet spring, huh? We don't have to complain about a lack of rain.
You know, this has been one of those years that we have here on the Cape every now and then where spring is very, very, very delayed. And there are actually some years where summer never really gets here. It's just spring, spring, spring. The side effect of that is, oh my goodness, the blooming plants look fabulous.
Oh, they do.
There's just such an extended period of bloom, and I'm enjoying it.
Oh, me too. It's like overnight almost. I was out looking at peonies, just fluffy, gorgeous peonies yesterday. I had to bring one inside. They're so beautiful. And roses too, just really bright and just...
Everything looks wonderful, but yeah. I have to say, in terms of peonies, this has been one of the best years for peonies I've seen in almost as long as I've been gardening. I have six or seven different varieties, and oh my goodness, they have just provided me with such delight over the past couple of weeks. It's great.
Yeah, they are beautiful. Are they a little, does the cold and the wet delay things? Like, are the peonies on time this year? I follow some online forums about gardening, and there were some questions from some Cape gardeners saying, geez, my peonies haven't bloomed yet. I mean, now they're blooming, but this was maybe a week or so ago. Is that any delay, or is that typical?
Yeah, they're within the ballpark for bloom. It definitely is affected by cooler temperatures. Things tend to come out a little bit later, and they have the effect of staying a little bit longer. So it's kind of a benefit. You don't see them quite as early as you normally do, but not necessarily very late. So it's within that overall time frame of bloom.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this cooler, wetter weather, I mean, of course, you're saying it's lush and verdant out there, but is it causing some other things to be delayed, like veggies or anything like that? We haven't seen, you know.
I have to tell you, I look at my vegetable garden and I am saying, when is this stuff going to start growing? Some things are doing very well. My peas have been fantastic, the ones that the rabbits didn't get. In fact, I'm going to start picking probably this week, and I expect to have a nice crop because it's been the perfect weather for peas, cool and damp. However, my zinnias, if they've grown an inch since I planted them on Memorial Day, I'd be surprised. So things that like a really warm period of weather to grow well, squash, cucumbers, are just sort of sitting there. They're not dying, but they don't really look wonderful in that they're not growing. The other thing that I'm probably going to end up replanting is my basil. I put it in Memorial Day weekend, and it just looks the same as it did in the six-pack. It's not looking good.
Yeah, I actually held back on planting a little basil in a deck planter because it just seemed chilly, and I know that it can not like it when it gets a little cool. And we're still, you know, there's forecasts for weather temperatures tonight or this week in the 50s, and that's a little bit chilly, I would think, for late June. We're kind of heading into late June now.
It is a week ago Sunday, not this recently past Sunday, but a week ago Sunday, it was 45 degrees when I got up at 6:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just indicative of the type of year we're having. Strangely enough, my tomatoes are doing very well.
Huh.
And they do like warmer weather. Peppers are sitting there, but my tomatoes are growing well. I've got lots of flowers on them. I'm actually on one little cherry variety. I have fruit, little tiny green nubs, but it's fruit, promise of things to come.
That's right.
So they are doing well, for which I'm grateful. So, you know, it's just one of those seasons where we have to kind of take it as it comes. The other downside to constant wet weather is there is the tendency to see more leaf spot type diseases, both on our vegetables, on trees and shrubs, and things like red thread and dollar spot on our lawn. So we tend to see a little more fungal disorders in cool, wet weather than we do on a dry year.
Mm-hmm. 866-999-4626. Tell us how your garden is looking and what's going on in your garden so far this year. You can email us as well, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With stuff like spot and some other mold and fungus problems on our plants, is there anything we can do to prevent it, or is it something that we kind of have to tackle as we see it?
Well, the problem with most fungal disorders is that for preventative measures such as fungicides, whether you're using an organic fungicide or a chemical fungicide, they are preventative in nature. In other words, they need to be put down on the foliage before the disease occurs, because they don't cure a disease. They simply prevent a disease. So if you've got tomatoes and you've had a lot of early blight in the past, it's probably a good idea this year to be removing the lower leaves to increase air circulation at the base of the plant, and to use whatever product you like to use on your tomatoes. A lot of people like Serenade, which is an organic material. You need to put that on a regular basis. It's not a one-shot does the trick. You need to put it on according to the label directions, which generally are about every 7 to 10 days. And as long as the weather stays damp, and it doesn't mean lots of rainfall, but damp, like right outside, it's very misty out at my house right now, so the foliage is wet. So you need to repeat that application on a regular basis until we get into some consistently drier weather, which I hope happens.
Right, and I guess time will only tell with that. Does mulching,
that's right.
Does mulching help with that kind of stuff, like with tomatoes, let's say, since we've been using that as an example? If you mulch around it, is that going to help it in any way?
Yeah, in a sense, yes. The organism that causes the early blight is present in soil. I mean, it's just a fact of nature. It's there. So anytime there's heavy rain, you get soil splashing up on those lower leaves containing the spores of the fungus. So if you put down a nice straw mulch or whatever you like to use for mulch, it prevents a lot of that splashing of dirt onto the lower leaves. I also like to, as my tomatoes grow, I remove the lower leaves till I have about 18 inches of bare stem. And again, that increases the distance from the soil, but also allows air circulation, so the foliage will dry off faster after rain or irrigation.
I see. So it may look a little spindly at first, but you're actually giving it a head start so that it will have healthier foliage in the long run.
In the long run. I use a product. I don't know what the name of it is now. It used to be called Mainly Mulch, and then their factory in Maine burned down, and I think it's now called Lucerne Farms Hay. And it's a chopped Timothy product that you can buy in small bales, and it's very clean, no weed seeds. It's attractive when you put it down, and it makes a great mulch in the vegetable garden. It breaks down by the end of the season, so you can just turn it into your garden when you're doing your soil preparation, and it adds some organic material. But it makes a great mulch. I really like it.
So it kind of serves a multifold purpose there. Looking good.
That's right.
Food and yep. Helping to keep that blight at bay. You know, we were talking things being slower, like in the veggie garden right now. Does it get to a point, let's say, when you've planted some cooler weather crops, when it's kind of too late to try again, especially if you're starting from seed right in the garden?
That's a good question. I like to plant successively. So I'll do, for things like beets and carrots and green beans and lettuce, things that have maybe a 60-day window from seed to harvest, I like to plant a short row, and about 2 to 3 weeks later, plant another short row, and then 2 to 3 weeks later, throughout the summer, plant small areas, and this allows me, as I'm harvesting one short row, the next one is getting ready to come into harvest. So for some things, no, you can plant continuously all summer into late August, early September. For crops that have a long season, tomatoes, peppers, and things like that, winter squash, we're reaching the point of if you're particularly if you're starting from seed, you're looking at it being kind of late. I always tell folks if they're starting from seed, look at the label of the seed package and see what the days to harvest are. If you're growing certain onions from seed, some of them take 100 days, and we're getting to the point where you're not really going to get them in time for them a good harvest.
All right, so really pay attention to the package directions.
Correct. It has all the information you need, you know, days to harvest, spacing, size of the plant, and a lot of information about the particular cultivar. So a lot of information on a seed packet.
866-999-4626. Give us a call if you've got a question about something happening in your garden or landscape, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeendislands.org. And we have an email from Amy, who says, in the past, we've had trees and blueberry bushes sprayed for winter moth caterpillars by a service, but it looks like she didn't do it this year, and it seems that the caterpillars got to the blueberry blossom. So she wants to know next year, when and what should she spray on the bushes so that she's got a blueberry harvest next year?
Yeah, I'm. That's too bad, because in most areas of the Cape, the winter moth population is very, very, very small. I did not spray my blueberries this year, and it looks like I'm going to have a fairly decent harvest on them. A lot of berries have set. But there are those little pockets throughout the Cape where you are still going to find them. So if it's hard to predict what next year's population will be like. I always kind of gauge it by around Thanksgiving on a evening around 5 or 6 o'clock, I turn on my outside light. And if particularly if we've had some rain, so the ground is damp, that's when the male moths begin flying. And if I have lots of moths around my lights, I'm going to think that maybe they'll be around next spring in caterpillar form. Mm. This year I did not have a lot of moths flying at all. But there were areas when I drove in the evening, parts of Centerville in particular, where I saw lots of moths and was thinking, oh, we'll be seeing caterpillars there next year. Mm. There are a number of products one can use because the winter moth caterpillar emerges fairly early in spring. You'd probably want to use a product containing spinosad and apply it to the plant sometime in mid-April. And again, repeat it as needed. But that's just a rule of thumb. You know, we don't really have an accurate way of predicting next year's infestation.
Right. And it is interesting how it comes up in little pockets, because in our backyard, I was actually lying in the hammock one day recently and looking up at the trees right above me, and they didn't look that good. They were kind of all chewed up, but majority of trees on my property look fine, unlike, you know, in years past where they really got chomped. Is it something, too, where if it's in patches, are the moths going to trees, or the caterpillars going to trees that are already a little bit weakened, maybe by past infestations?
That I don't really know. They have their preferred species. They love maples, and then they go gravitate toward oak after maple. So it's hard to predict. Generally, trees that are weakened by other factors in previous years tend to be more prone to pest problems simply because they're in a weakened state. But it's very kind of hit or miss when the population is low, which it appears to be overall this year. You'd get the individual tree that's being eaten when the one next to it looks fine.
Mm, yeah, and that's what I see. And that's obviously the case for Amy. 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have to take a quick break, but we'll be right back to talk about some more gardening tips and tricks. Welcome back to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident, in for Mindy Todd. And today we're talking all about gardening with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Roberta, it's June. June is the time around here for strawberries.
Yes.
How is the crop? Have you any idea of how good the crop is going to be this year for strawberries?
I have seen a lot of people lately posting pictures. There's a wonderful little group on, it's not a little group, it's a big group on Facebook, Cape Cod Gardening. And a lot of people lately have been posting pictures of the strawberries they've been picking at Tony Andrews Farm. And it looks like it's a good crop. My strawberries were just starting to come in, and something ate every single plant, all the leaves, all the unripe berries. I'm not sure what it was, but I'm not getting any crop this year, but it looks like other folks are.
Oh, that's good. That's always heartbreaking when you go out and it, you know, it just happens overnight. Suddenly you look out and like, hey, everything's gone. It's decimated.
Gone. I have planted dill 3 times, and it's been eaten every single time. So now I'm planting dill in pots on my deck.
Right. Keep it close.
Exactly.
I have an email here from Steve from Wellfleet who says he has 4 dwarf Asian pears and they're wonderful, he says, but he's had a problem with wormy cores, and based on pictures, he's thinking they might be coddling moths. And he started spraying 4 years ago with spinosad.
Yeah.
And it worked when he did it every 2 weeks. And now he's wondering, does he need to keep it up and spray every 2 weeks, or he's looking for the most benefit and the least effort?
Yeah, coddling moth has a period during which the moths are out laying their eggs, and then once the worms are in the fruit, it really doesn't do you a lot of good. I have an Asian pear, and I haven't had that problem. My problem has been the winter moth making it so I don't get a crop, but I'm getting one this year. I would probably talk to Russ Norton at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, and he's very familiar with fruit and fruit pests, and he could give Steve the exact timetable for how long he would need to spray. It probably does not need to be the entire summer, but there may be 2 or 3 sprays every 7 to 10 days apart that do the trick. But I'm not familiar with the length of time that needs to continue.
Okay, well, always calling Russ is a good idea. They are just...
Russ is a great resource.
Yep.
You know, Russ Norton is the extension horticulturist. Came on the job after I retired, and he also is maintaining the Master Gardener program, which is another fabulous resource for people to call or go visit with their pest problems.
Barbara writes in and says that she has some small golden snails on her arugula, and how can she get rid of them?
Yeah, I've never really found a good control for snails and slugs. A lot of people like to use diatomaceous earth, sprinkle it on the ground around the plants, and the theory is that because it has very sharp edges, it's a microscopic material, has very sharp edges, and slugs and snails don't like to crawl over it. So that's certainly something that can be tried. Apparently it works very well for earwigs, which can be a little recognized pest in the vegetable garden. They like to skeletonize leaves.
Yes.
But in the meantime, just go out there and pick them off, you know, try the diatomaceous earth, see if that helps.
So it's a lot of just kind of vigilance this time of year when there's so many hungry creatures, including humans, out and about in the garden.
Well, there is that. It was a great year for radishes. I had a bumper crop of radishes and ended up eating them right out of the garden and pickling them, which is a neat thing to do with radishes.
I love to pickle radishes.
They're too
wonderful that way. It takes a little of the bite out of them, but they're still crunchy and they're still delicious.
Yeah.
I've got Nan and Brewster who writes in saying, that she thought she outsmarted the rabbits who were eating her plants by enclosing her garden with a wire fence. But then she planted some dahlia bulbs around Memorial Day that keep sprouting, but they're looking a little eaten. So she sprayed for insects. She's thinking maybe not rabbits, but actually chipmunks. Is there a way to keep chipmunks away?
I sure wish. I've got one that lives in my wood pile, and he's a cheeky little fellow. He comes out and chatters at me if I get too close to where he considers it's his territory. I haven't found a good method of reducing chipmunks. I have a fence around one bed that was being eaten, I thought, by rabbits. And rabbits can't get into it, but the mesh size, I think, would allow a chipmunk in, and that's the bed where the dill has been eaten three times. So either a smaller mesh fence, but around, if she's got her dahlias out in another part of the garden, she might put some row cover over them for a short term to allow them to grow up without being eaten. It's not the most attractive material out in the garden, but it might serve to protect them long enough so that they get some nice strong shoots.
Right. I mean, is there a point when they don't get eaten anymore? Or is it something that they're just always going to be tasty, even when they're starting to produce flowers?
I think when they get big enough, the plants get big enough, the chipmunks just don't bother them.
Okay. So it's when they're kind of tender.
When they're tender young sprouts, yeah.
And
by the time they're bigger, the chipmunks have probably found your cherry tomatoes.
They've moved on to the
exactly.
throughout the buffet that is your garden. Let's see here. Catler writes in saying that for the second year, something has been making a clean cut at the bottom of the salvia, dropping the cut stock somewhere in the yard. It's not a ragged cut, so doesn't think it's being eaten, but also says that something's eating the echinacea close to the ground. Last year, some cut stocks were left behind. This year, the cut pieces are nowhere to be found. So wondering, Catler's wondering if somebody's trying to gather nesting material?
That's a possibility. If you're finding stalks and stems that are cut and lying right on the ground, the first thing that comes to my mind are cutworms. And we tend to think of cutworms as being a problem in the vegetable garden, but they're equally a problem in the perennial and the annual border. But if the stems are disappearing, that would indicate they're either being carried off or they're being eaten. So I'm not sure what's doing that. I would question whether or not there are deer in the neighborhood.
Right, right. Especially if it's getting carried off and disappearing.
Exactly. And they make a clean cut.
Hmm. What about, though, for cutworms? If you're saying that they cut through the stalk of something that drops to the ground, that's got to destroy the plant. What do you do for something like that? And what do they seem to like the most?
Well, in the vegetable garden, I always have a problem with them on peppers for some reason. This year, I lost two pepper plants right after I put them in the ground. So when I replanted them, I sort of wrapped the stems in a couple of thickness of newspaper, just plain old newspaper, and that seems to protect them. Some people used to, one of the old gardening wisdom ideas was to, when you planted your peppers, to put in a nail right next to the stem, and the theory was that the cutworm could then not circle around and cut through the whole stem. I'm not sure how effective it is, but it sounds kind of cool. I just like wrapping the stem, and you could use any material you like, and generally about from the ground level, slightly below the ground level, up about 2 inches, and it protects the stem from them trying to chew through it. There are pesticides you can use, but I think you can use a non-chemical method instead.
Mm-hmm.
You could use spinosad. That's pretty effective on caterpillar pests. They hide in the soil. They come out at night, so you get up in the morning and you go out to your garden, and I've had zinnia stems cut through. I mean, there are a number of plants that they seem to go for. Mm. And if you sort of dig around in the soil within 6 inches or so of the stem, 9 times out of 10, you'll find them, and they're sort of a fat, brownish, grayish, not hairy caterpillar, and it sort of curls up in a ball. And if you do that and you find them, obviously you squish them.
Right.
Takes care of them.
Get rid of them. Get rid of
That's
them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. 866-999-4626. Do you have a question about a plant or a tree or a shrub on your garden landscape, or a comment about how the season is going with this rather wet, cool weather we've been having? Or send us an email with some questions. The Point at capeandislands.org. Bonnie writes in, and she, we've talked a little about blueberries already with Amy. She doesn't have any this year because she thinks it's the moths. You've got blueberry fruit already setting on your bush, but Bonnie says hers don't seem to be doing well this year. Have you heard? Are other people complaining, or is it a good year for blueberries?
I haven't heard anyone complaining. I work at a garden center 3 days a week and have a lot of people come in asking questions or telling me what's going wrong in their gardens, and that has not been a plant that people have been talking about. So I think, as with the winter moth, it's a very spotty problem. Blueberries like the cool weather. They want full sun, if possible, although they will tolerate, you know, a little bit of shade. They really like a soil that stays moist and cool. So if they're growing under less than ideal conditions, that could be part of the problem. I also find that even though they are self-pollinating, if you have two or more different varieties, you tend to get a better fruit set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they're also pollinated by bumblebees. And if you haven't seen a lot of bumblebees around, it's possible you didn't get adequate pollination.
Right. As usual, it's always could be a number of factors.
Exactly. There's never one simple answer. Wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't it? Absolutely. Although it might take some of the thrill out of gardening.
It's a mystery sometimes.
It is. I have a call from Crystal from West Tisbury. Good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, how you doing?
Good
morning.
What's your question?
So my question is, for the last couple of years, actually, I've had an issue with my peppers and my cucumbers that something is just eating through the leaves when they're small and then just killing them. And it's not deer. I've got a fence around it, so I don't know what the heck it is.
With cucumbers, it's possible it's the cucumber beetle, which is a small beetle, sort of a tannish yellow color with some black stripes down its wing covers. And they're small, and if you disturb the plant, they drop off and scurry away or fly away, and it's easy to overlook them. And if nothing is done during a cucumber beetle infestation, they really make short work of the cucumber plants, eating holes and turning the foliage almost into a brown skeletonized leaf. I have used spinosad. I've also used materials with pyrethrin, and that seems to work well. The pepper plant, there are a couple of things that will do that to peppers. I mentioned earwigs. The earwigs seem to be indiscriminate feeders, and they like young, tender foliage, and they also feed at night, and so you come out and you have the effect of the foliage looks sort of skeletonized. They eat the leaf material but leave the veins. Diatomaceous earth works fairly well in discouraging them, but again, it needs to be replaced after it rains.
Okay, thank you. That is exactly what's happening. I was wondering about diatomaceous earth.
Yep, give it a try.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Although she might want to wait a couple days, right? Because we do have so much
after
rain.
After it rains, yes.
Yeah. You put it down and then it's gone. You need a little time to set and in dry conditions. Hopefully we'll see those a little later this week.
So, yes, they're talking about a little bit of rain for the next like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
It's like,
yep.
Oh, joy.
I know. It's such a mixed bag because on the one hand, we're not out there, you know, dragging hoses all over the yard.
And that is a benefit.
Right. But on the other hand, it's a pros and cons to everything.
Yes. Yes.
Susan.
The weeds love it.
Yeah, and yes, they do. Absolutely. Everything loves it, I think, perhaps
yeah.
Except the humans sometimes. We have Susan on the line from Westport. Good morning, Susan.
Yes, good morning. I have a question about tomato plants. I know cold evenings and blustery winds are terrible, and we've had them.
Yes.
And the leaves turn white, lacy-like. Will they recover enough with the continued wet rain, windy nights, and so on, or what does one do?
I'm not sure it's going to be the best of tomato years. I we can't unfortunately control the weather. When we have a lot of rain, any fertilizer that you utilized when you did your soil preparation and planted your tomatoes, much of it is being washed away. I mean, last week alone, we had Tuesday here at my house, I had over an inch and a half of rain, and then last Thursday, I had an inch and a third of rain. And it seems like every week we have just copious amounts of rainfall, and it's literally washing fertilizer elements out of the soil. So it probably would not harm your plants if you wanted to side dress them with a slow release fertilizer, or even use a liquid fertilizer and do a foliar feeding just to help them along in this kind of weather situation.
And the growth that started after the leaf damage is mm-hmm. very slow also. Can one suppose you might get some results, or my inclination is just to get rid of those plants and plant something else?
How puny are they?
They're pretty puny to me. The plants are tall, but the leaf damage is done, and the new growth is healthy and green as if it were a 6-inch plant growth.
Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't give up on them yet. At some point, usually towards the end of June, and I'm hoping this year holds true, we get a break in the weather pattern where we suddenly go into directly summer, and
right.
It gets very warm and sunny July into August. And they should recover and take off once that weather arrives, should it arrive. So I probably wouldn't give up on them yet.
That's great. Every year's a new experiment, so I appreciate your advice.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
866-999-4626. Do you have a question about something that's going on in your garden? Give us a call. Roberta can try to help you out. You can also email us thepoint@capeandislands.org. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back to answer more of your questions. Welcome back to The Point. I'm Catherine Ident in for Mindy Todd, and we are talking about gardening this morning with horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark. And please give us a call if you have a question, 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email with a question or comment, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Roberta, we've been talking about the fact that we've had a lot of rain. We had like an inch on one day last week. What kind of watering advice do you have, though? I mean, if you have new plantings in the ground, especially some bigger shrubs and trees, we all kind of fall victim to this. Oh, it's raining out, but maybe we're not getting that soaking inch. Maybe we're just getting a sprinkle. Should we be watering in the meantime when it's not downpouring?
You know, that's a very, very good point. I always encourage folks to buy an inexpensive rain gauge, because that allows you to know exactly how much rain you're getting in your mini environment of where your gardens are. You know, it may be raining in Hyannis, and where you're living in Sandwich, it's bone dry, or vice versa. And when we have days where we're only getting, it looks like, oh, it's a wet day, I can't work in the garden today, it's raining, but I don't need to water, it may not be what you think. My rain gauge some days tells me I'm only getting a tenth of an inch when it's been sort of drizzly and wet all day. And in that case, particularly for newly planted material, as you pointed out, you do still need to provide supplemental water. So get a rain gauge. Give your newly planted stuff, trees and shrubs, a good deep soaking once a week in the event that we're not getting that good heavy rain. And even for vegetables and annuals and perennials, they have much smaller root systems, particularly if you're putting in six-pack annuals, planting a six-pack of zinnias or calendula or whatever you're growing this year. Those will dry out very quickly because they've got a very tiny little root system. Or if, say, you're planting containers with different annuals and ornamentals, you need to pay attention to how much rain we're getting so that you can provide the water that they need for to get established and develop a good root system so later in the year you don't need to be watering that frequently. So don't rely on looking out the window and saying, oh, it's raining, I don't need to water. Get a cheap rain gauge. Hardware stores have them. Garden centers have them. And they're really a very essential tool for a gardener, I think.
What about for shrubs or trees that are, you know, you planted them last year? Do you need to be as diligent this summer? Like, let's say when it gets hot and sunny and humid, or which we're hoping for in July and August.
Yes, we're all dreaming of that.
Right. But do you need to be as diligent in watering those like we might have, let's say, in the first year when they were just put into the ground?
The rule of thumb for trees and shrubs is and most plants in general, it takes about 3 years to become what we considered fully established. So it might not be quite as crucial the second or the third year as it was the first, but it's still important. So you need to pay attention. If we go into one of our famous dry spells in the summer, I've seen summers where we didn't get any rain for like 6 weeks other than, you know, a tenth of an inch here or there, then yes, all plants, even those that were well established, do benefit from a good deep soaking. The other thing I would recommend, a perfect tool for gardeners, is to buy inexpensive mechanical timers that you can put on your spigots. And this allows you to set them for a particular length of time. You can put your rain gauge in that general area so you know how long it takes to put down an inch of water. That's sort of the benchmark figure for plants. And then you can set your gate timers to, you know, say an hour or an hour and a half, however long it takes you to put down that required amount of water. And that takes the guesswork out of it. Instead of just going out and putting on the sprinkler for, say, 30 minutes, you know how long it's going to take to give the adequate amount of water. So a rain gauge and just a simple, inexpensive mechanical timer are really useful tools to have when you're trying to water properly.
All right. We have Patty on the line from Eastham. Patty, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about whether I've made a mistake with my hydrangea and an azalea.
Okay.
They're both in their third year, and I gave them some liquid Miracle-Gro 2 weeks ago, and then I left for a few days. And when I came back, they both appeared to have almost completely died. So I'm wondering if I made a mistake with the Miracle-Gro, and should I abandon them at this point or just see if they come back?
How did you apply it?
I mixed it with water.
According to the label directions?
Yeah, yeah.
And you sprayed the foliage or drenched the root system?
I drenched the root system.
Yeah, it's generally meant to be a foliar spray rather than a soil drench. It's possible you might have burned the foliage by burning roots first if it was too strong. Sometimes the root hairs, which are the part of the root that absorbs water and nutrients, and they're very delicate. And if there's a fertilizer too strong, it can literally burn the root hairs, and then they're impaired in terms of absorbing water and nutrients, and where you see that damage is in the foliage. I wouldn't, unless they're so unsightly you can't stand looking at them, I probably wouldn't be in a rush to yank them out.
Yeah,
I'd give them, you know, maybe, with all the rain, I was going to say flush the root system with a lot of water to try and rinse out some of that fertilizer, and just keep an eye on them and look and see that they start putting out new growth within a couple of weeks. If they don't, then yes, pull them out. But I like to give plants a chance.
Then I will, too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I know. It's hard when you've been waiting all winter and you put something in the ground and you've had success with it in previous years and it's not quite doing the same thing this year. It's hard not to get impatient, but it really is early in the season. It's only June. So
you're absolutely right. You know, I think we're all just still sort of chomping on the bit because of the way the weather has been this spring, in that it hasn't yet warmed up. So it seems like, you know, winter and early spring just keep continuing, and we're expecting, you know, fully sunny days, going to the beach, warm weather. We will get there. I'm sure we will. I hope we will.
We're like the comfort club here today.
Exactly.
Let's see here. Cliff is on the road, but he wants to know what you think about he had winter moths sprayed. He had his property sprayed for winter moths by a landscaper who said that they were using something that was eco-friendly. But now, this was 3 years ago, and he said that for the last 3 years, he hasn't really seen any bees, and he's sorry he sprayed. Is spraying for winter moths harmful to bees?
Well, usually, I'm going to say if they're using something like spinosad and they're applying it to tree canopies where the trees are not in bloom, you know, oaks and maples, then no. If it's applied to plants in bloom, spinosad when it's wet will impact bees. Once it's dry, it does not impact bees. So that's sort of a critical thing to keep in mind when anyone is using spinosad. It's a great product, but timing is important if you want to minimize harm to bees. If it were 3 years ago, I'm thinking it no longer has any effect on the bee population. So there might be something else that's happening in his general area. You know, I look around. I don't do any major spraying in my yard, but I do have neighbors that have treated for winter moth. And I find I'm seeing a normal complement of honeybees and bumblebees and dragonflies and other insects. One thing that I haven't seen so far, and I'm really surprised, is I haven't seen a lot of mosquitoes, and I thought for sure this would be a banner mosquito year because of all the wet weather, because it's just too chilly for them. I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you about that, actually. That's interesting. Yeah, I'm sure we will be seeing mosquitoes later on. So.
Later on, unfortunately.
I have a couple of comments. Will from North Falmouth said that, kind of referencing something we talked about earlier, that he had trouble with something leaving behind the cut stems of perennials, and he thinks it was voles on his property.
That is a good, supposition. Voles will chew through stems. Mm-hmm. They do like vegetation. I had a major problem with voles in the demonstration garden at the fairgrounds, in that they would eat all my beans and beets, and they will also affect perennials as well. So I would say Will might be onto something there.
Yep. And Carl from Acushnet said that his garden is growing slowly as well, and we were talking about that. And he thanks you for your tip on wet weather gardening, saying that he also loves radishes. You were talking about your radishes.
Yes.
And has them on crackers with cheese and guacamole, or slices them for sandwiches.
That sounds good.
Delightful. And I have a question from Ed from Falmouth, who wrote in to say that he's seen multiple recommendations for spraying sodium bicarbonate solution to prevent mildew and blight. And he's had two terrible years of powdery mildew destruction on his veggies. And so he's planning to try it. And he wants to know if you think it's effective.
Sodium bicarbonate is baking soda. And it has been found that a baking soda solution does have some efficacy on prevention of certain diseases. There are commercial products that you can buy, but it's not sodium, it's potassium bicarbonate, which is the most effective. And if you go online and Google potassium bicarbonate fungicide, you'll come up with a lot of information on it and what products it contains. It's totally non-toxic to people, to animals, and as far as I know, to insects. But yet it's very effective in managing things like black spot on rose. I believe it's also used for early blight on tomatoes. So it is a good product. It's not cheap, or at least I haven't found a cheap formulation of it. I hesitate to recommend making up your own mixture at home because there's a question of getting the correct proportions of material to water. So I always urge people to buy a product where the guesswork is taken out of it and use it according to label instructions.
Right. Pay that a little bit of money if it's not cheap. Someone's done the thinking for you. So.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But it's a great product. I've used it and had wonderful results with it.
I want to ask about grass. You mentioned, you know, with problems with the wet weather, red thread in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
Can you still plant grass or sod right now? I mean, still have this cool weather? Or are we kind of bumping up against the window where it might not be the best to put down big tracts of sod or something like that?
Sod can go down pretty much any time as long as you keep it moist, so that the roots, you still have to do proper soil preparation and create a nice bed to put the sod on. But sod can basically be installed almost up until winter, probably not that late, but you know, certainly maybe late September, early October, and still have time to root in. Seed, on the other hand, yes, we are definitely bumping up against that window. I was going to go out earlier this spring and just sort of top seed my front lawn, which is also the dog yard, so the lawn is not wonderful. And I never got around to it, and now I'm looking at it going, oh, I should have done it, but now it's a little late. Mm. However, mid-August to mid-September, if you need to put down grass seed or you need to renovate sections of your lawn and you don't want to use sod, that is the ideal time in any year to put down grass seed. So I'm going to get out there in late August and rake up those areas of dead grass and put down some fresh seed. And I expect by October my lawn will look halfway decent.
Oh, that's not bad. So, you know, a little more patience, a few more weeks if you're not that thrilled with how your front lawn might look, and you'll get some better results if you have, again, patience.
Exactly.
Word that comes up often when gardening.
You know, we can't control nature. You know, we can't control the weather. So it's a great lesson for all of us to just, you know, let it happen.
Take a breath.
And be patient.
I think we have time for one more question, and it's Marianne who wrote in asking if she can mix two products such as Fish Emulsion and Thrive in the same watering can to water container plants.
That I'm going to hesitate on giving an answer. I know commercial applicators do what they call tank mixes, where they mix different ingredients for one spray. I'm not all that familiar with Thrive, so I might be hesitant to combine it, and I might just make two separate applications, separated by several days, without knowing what that ingredient is.
Okay. And I guess we have time for a brief answer to this question, if you can. And it's Martha in Wellfleet who says, how to get rid of ivy.
Yeah.
Keep pulling it out.
A lot of hard work, hands and knees, gloves, and keep pulling it up. You know, it used to be before all the information about something like Roundup came out, I might recommend it, but I'm not recommending Roundup for any purposes anymore. The links to cancer have been so numerous, I hesitate to suggest that people try that. So hard work and persistence, you can get rid of it.
And we are about out of time. Horticulturalist and entomologist Roberta Clark visits us every third Tuesday of the month in gardening season. Roberta, thanks as always for joining us and for imparting some of your vast knowledge about the gardening landscape.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next month.
All righty.
And I'm Catherine Ident. I'm in for Mindy Todd. Thank you for joining us.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.